Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Counsel.
May it please the Court, my name is Chuan Hong. Before I start my argument on question of law, I'd like to clarify some of the facts, I should say false facts, used by the Court and the appellees. Because of these four false facts, District Court dismissed the case. So first false fact is the following. Plaintiffs, my client, alleges that pomegranate CoQ10 Plus did not remove her fatigue, mood change, and insomnia. That's what she claimed. Then court order, which is shown in ER-016, and the respondent brief, page 38 and 39, falsely states that plaintiff's allegation is a made-up statement because the website, parenthesis, FamousHerbs.com said the product reduced the health issues, not removed the health issues. This is absolutely wrong.
Why is the website of any relevance at all? Don't allege that the website was owned by or is a statement of the defendants. It's a third-party website.
Yes, I'm going to.
And you say in your, the website says it relies on information from them. But that's not a statement by them, and it doesn't, and you haven't identified the information from them that the website purportedly relies on. So why is the website of any relevance at all?
Our website is considered to be label or labeling under FDCA.
If it's their website, to be sure. The question I'm trying to ask you is, there's no allegation in this case that makes it plausible that it's their website or their allegations that are on the website.
Yeah, there are two websites. One website is www.umekenusa.com. The second website, the court and the appellee claims the third party website.
On its face, it's a third party website, and you don't allege. You're given seven opportunities to amend. You never make a plausible allegation that it's their website.
Oh, it's because of the false fact they insist to use in dismissing the case.
So tell us about this website. Is it owned by Umekin? Does he put information on it?
So I assume it's a www. Umekin USA.
The other one, not the Umekin.
The other one. That website is at www.famousherb.com. It has a picture of Umekin product or issue, CoQ10, and it gives an address of Umekin headquarters in California, and also it cites the Umekin USA booklet, which is called "Nature is a Healer."
You can rely on the Umekin booklet. I don't doubt that. My question is, can you rely on a third party's description of what he thinks Umekin products do?
Yeah. May I finish the sentence which I couldn't finish?
Sure.
The Umekin booklet, "Nature is a Healer," is listed there with an asterisk. So if you trace back to the statement with the asterisks, those asterisks are the statement about the insomnia, about the mood change.
Is the statement that's referenced in the Umekin booklet?
That's what
the website says. I'm asking you, did you allege the statement is actually in the Umekin booklet, or did you simply allege that the website said the statement was in the Umekin booklet?
the latter, because at the present time, I don't know who owns and who controls the famous herb and even the www, Umeken USA. We assume it has a name, the Umeken USA, and all the other circumstantial evidence say that this must be a Umeken website. Otherwise, a third party who is crazy spend more money and spend their time in advertising third party's product. That's absolutely unreasonable.
So did you allege that they were Umeken owned or controlled?
In the complaint?
Uh-huh.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is it? Where is that?
It's in the... It's paragraph 5, 6, 7, that ring.
Okay.
You're talking about the second amended complaint?
Second amendment. Amended complaint. Yeah, it's in ER 152, page 3 of a second amended complaint. Reasonable consumer knew that defendants controlled or placed the cited statement about the pomegranate ball CoQ10 on www.famousherb.com. The website refers, and so on and so on. But these insomnia disease claims are not made only on Famous Herb. It is also made in Umeken website, which defendants and the judge implicitly admit that belongs to the Umeken, the manufacturer. There's a...
Just help me here. I'm looking at the allegations in 152, and it says reasonable consumers knew that they controlled... I mean, what does that mean?
Reasonable...
Well, why is it plausible that reasonable consumers knew that they controlled or placed statements on Famous Herbs?
Yeah, in California, the Sherman Act, if anybody claim falsity or deception, that determination of a falsity or deception must be based upon
unreasonable
consumer.
I understand, but why is it plausible that defendants, after all, take off the reasonable consumers, just assume that the allegation is defendants controlled or placed the cited statements about pomegranate balls on www.famousherbs.com. Why is that plausible?
Well, because the way...
I mean, you have to plead with particularity here because you're alleging fraud.
Yeah, if it's a third-party website, then we have to see their address or their telephone number. But this website give Umeken's telephone number, Umeken's address, Umeken's booklet, and Umeken's picture of the product.
I just found Umeken's address and phone number on the web. They're not secrets.
Oh, the Umeken phone number is given there, too. Yes. Can I continue... Then I think it's my list of false factual statement in the court order and the defendant responding brief will answer several of questions. The second false... First one, it says the court said... Pomegranate CoQ10 did not remove a condition, does not make a statement that the product will reduce the condition false. This is wrong. Why? You cannot find the word reduced in 2 pages of the famous herb website. So they created their own statement and compared and manufactured the fabricated statement with the plaintiff's accusation of falsity. Then they said, you have must have made up the story to accuse the manufacturer. The second false fact is the following. The court order ER14 says, plaintiff has not alleged that the cited statement regarding insomnia, fatigue, mood change of www.famousherb.com are quote from the American USA information booklet. If the court and the defendant examine the Famous Herb website more carefully, they will see there's an asterisk mark after insomnia mood change. Then you link that asterisk mark to the bottom of the page. Then you see Umeken USA information booklet. So I thought that that's more than enough to tell these statements are from the Umeken USA information booklet.
Is the complaint alleged which way they, that why are they false? What's the evidence to suggest that those representations were false?
Oh, that is a, in the, regarding 9B analysis, because it doesn't work. In other words,
it didn't work for her, or there's some sort of general scientific evidence that it doesn't work for X number of people.
Oh, because no one started Umeken product CoQ10, therefore there is no scientific evidence, but anecdotal evidence based upon Kwan versus National, which is accepted by this court. It requires a scientific evidence or scientific study, experimental, the test, or anecdotal evidence. Then court cite ECLA so much to give the meaning of the anecdotal evidence, but that product has been very different from this product. Those product, the advertise that the knee joint will be lubricated, knee joint will be aligned, something like that. So no customer, client can tell what they're talking about. So in that case, you can not present the reasonable anecdotal evidence, but here the claim is that insomnia can be cured, mitigated, or prevented, even though those words are not given. Since they use the disease term, is used for drug. But the drug is defined as an article which mitigate, diagnose, cure, prevent the disease. So as long as a claim can be interpreted, any one of those, you can consider that as a disease claim, or you can consider article as a...
So I want to understand your, claim. Let's assume for a moment that the third party website works, that you can you can rely on it here. It says recommended for women experiencing menopausal symptoms. When I'm looking at the asterisks,
yes.
And the other ones, who should take it? And there's a list of people who should take it. Does it, is it your position that those things are can be reasonably interpreted as a statement that these will solve those problems, mitigate those problems? What's your position?
My position is the following. It says CoQ10 is recommended for a person with insomnia, mood change, or I forgot
right. I know that's what it says. I'm asking you what you think that means.
Yeah. reasonable consumer will read that, oh, they say, oh, by taking CoQ10, maybe some of my problem of insomnia, mood change can be eliminated.
Well, that's precisely the question I asked you. So does this suggest they will be eliminated or that they might be mitigated?
It doesn't matter, Your Honor. Most important thing is the inclusion of the words insomnia. So the extreme example is the following. This CoQ10 is good for person with skin cancer or lung cancer. Then reasonable person or the ignorant or unthinking or credulous customers will see that, oh, this is good for curing cancer or mitigating cancer or preventing cancer. If those are the consumers who happen to be reasonable or ignorant, or I'm talking about 60 years ago.
I think you've answered my question.
Yeah.
All right, counsel, you run out of time. So we'll hear from the other side.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Stephen Richards of Houston Hennigan LLP on behalf of Defendant Appellees Umekin USA, Inc. and Brian Hahn. A lot going on here. I'd like to start with two of the colloquies from Mr. Hong's argument just now. First, with respect to the famousherbs.com website, Mr. Hong did not connect, plaintiff did not connect that website to Umekin satisfactorily for the district court. The district court should be affirmed on that point. I do want to visit one particular issue there, which is the appearance of Umekin's address on the website and the phone number. As you'll see on, and I'm looking here at ER198, that information only appears because it's on an image of the Umekin product.
So assume for a moment that he didn't plausibly allege that it was your website. He does allege that it purports to quote from your information booklet, and if the quotes from your information booklet are accurate, why can't they be the basis of his claims?
Well, there's no allegation that they are accurate, Your Honor.
I know, but now we're talking about plausibility. We have a website that cites to a specific page of your information booklet. He can't conduct discovery because we're on a motion to dismiss. So why doesn't that make it plausible that your information booklet says those things?
Well, two responses, Your Honor. First, that there's no allegation that he needs discovery to find the information booklet.
Try to answer the question I'm asking. The question is, why doesn't the citation on this website to your information booklet with a page cite make it plausible that your information booklet says precisely what this website says?
If it were a correct citation to the booklet, then yes, we would, of course, agree, Your Honor, that there would be a plausible allegation that Umekin was responsible for that statement. That doesn't mean that the statement is labeling for the purposes
of... No, that's a different question. So, but can I at least start out with the proposition that your information booklet contains these kinds of representations?
I don't think so, Your Honor, not at least absent an allegation that the booklet exists and that it says these things. I don't think...
Oh, come on. No, see, here's the problem. You know whether the booklet exists or not. The booklet does exist. The booklet says something. What it says may not be sufficient to support their claims, but the notion that at the motion to dismiss stage, he has to do more than produce a website that cites, that purports to quote from your booklet, is a little troublesome to me.
Well, I'm happy to concede, Your Honor, that if the booklet says what the third party reports that it says, that those statements could be attributable to Umekin, not necessarily.
So if they are, why don't they support his claims?
Well, first of all, they may not be labeling. And again, we'd need to know more about the booklet to know whether or not it accompanies a product and therefore could qualify as labeling under the federal statutes and regulations here. That's the first issue. The second issue goes to the content of the statements. As you know, plaintiff here has two theories based on this language. The first theory is that these statements make what are impermissible disease claims under federal law, and the second is that they make misleading structure function claims under federal law. I'll begin with the structure function claims. There's no allegation that these structure function claims are misleading because plaintiff hasn't offered sufficient allegations under Rule 9b that they were untrue in her instance or untrue in anyone else's interest. Instance. And this returns to the remove versus reduce issue that you were discussing with plaintiff's counsel earlier, saying, look, I have insomnia and it wasn't cured when I took this product that is recommended for people with menopausal symptoms, including insomnia, is not an allegation that the recommendation for those individuals is a misleading structure function statement. As to the disease claims, plaintiff's counsel is correct that in some circumstances, a reference to insomnia or chronic fatigue could be construed as a disease claim under federal law. But in this instance, where it's part of a laundry list of other menopausal symptoms and where the relevant federal regulator has made clear that menopausal symptoms or symptoms of other stages of life, aging, the menstrual cycle, the menopausal, et cetera, that those are symptoms and conditions that are properly the subject of structure function claims and not disease claims.
This product you often see on vitamin supplements and other pills that say this is good for your bones or good for your heart. There's usually a disclaimer that says something about the FDA not having in any way approved or evaluated in substance, indicating that the FDA doesn't endorse any of this. Do these products contain such a disclaimer?
Yes, Your Honor. The disclaimer appears on the products themselves, i.e. on the packaging of the products. It also appears on the websites for the products that are actually controlled by Umeckin.
And I would is that umeckinusa.com?
Yes, Your Honor. We concede that that's our website. So I would refer you to pages 192 of the ER, as well as page 189 of the ER. And if you'll look at 189, you'll see that there's a box at the top of that page, direction, and then we have the asterisk. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. That's the required language of the disclaimer. The disclaimer appears on the product, and the disclaimer is linked to the text describing the product by an asterisk as required by federal law. I do want to visit the Melendrez issue just briefly. As you know, the district court dismissed all claims based on 13 products that plaintiff did not purchase on the ground that she lacked Article III standing to pursue those claims. And I understand there's a question now whether that was error under the Melendrez case or under the BK case from just a few weeks ago that applied Melendrez. It was not. Melendrez does say that the Article III standing analysis concludes once we've determined that the named plaintiff has standing to pursue at least one class claim. But it cannot be the rule that means that any plaintiff, any putative class representative could bring any sort of class claim.
Why isn't that addressable, as Melendrez suggests, at the class certification stage? You may be a terrible representative. There may be lots of reasons not to grant class certification. But why should we be parsing those issues at the motion to dismiss stage?
When the differences between the named plaintiff, Your Honor, and the unnamed class members, the claims of those particular individuals, are significant enough, they implicate Article III standing and therefore the subject matter jurisdiction of the court. And therefore, they're appropriate to be addressed at the motion to dismiss stage.
Are they? Why? My problem is, you may be right as a matter of policy. Melendrez doesn't appear to be widely accepted among our sister courts, but since we start off with it as the law, Melendrez makes an expressly different conclusion, doesn't it?
Well, I don't want to lose the policy point, which is that
the policy point doesn't help me if Melendrez is against you.
Sure. Then in that case, I would refer you to Melendrez's discussion of the Lewis case from the Supreme Court. So in Lewis, there were a number of inmates in the Arizona penal system who challenged the Arizona penal system's the access to courts that they had in that penal system. And some of the inmates had particular problems. Some were illiterate. Some didn't speak English. Others were in lockdown and weren't permitted to visit the law library. And the Supreme Court said in that case, because only the illiterate inmates ultimately were able to show an injury in that case, they didn't have Article III standing to pursue claims.
Right, but the case was not dismissed at the motion to dismiss stage.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the court had a record and said, look, these folks don't have standing. But the question in Melendrez is whether it ought to be dismissed at the motion to dismiss stage. And the statement of Melendrez doesn't seem to leave much room for doubt. If the individual plaintiff has standing, then you shouldn't dismiss the class claims until later on.
I would emphasize again that Melendrez is also not a dismissal at the motion to dismiss stage. Melendrez is actually a post-trial appeal, so there, of course, the court also
has its record. But you don't need to win on the Melendrez point in order to prevail in this case, do you?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Because plaintiff never stated a claim in her individual capacity, this court need not reach the claim she attempted to state on the basis of the products that she did not purchase. I want to also visit the Davidson issue with the availability of injunctive relief. Davidson had not yet been issued by this court when the district court below, in its first order granting Umekin's motion to dismiss, dismissed plaintiff's claims for injunctive relief under Article III standing. And Davidson subsequently, as we've argued in our brief, and I don't intend to belabor this, but we believe that the district court's analysis with respect to injunctive relief was precisely in line with Davidson. The district court correctly determined that whether or not the plaintiff had Article III standing to pursue injunctive relief under Davidson and Lyons and the other cases turned on whether or not she was likely to encounter the products again, i.e. whether or not she intended to purchase the products again. And there are no allegations in this case that she does intend to purchase any of these products again. The only hint of that came in plaintiff's reply brief. This is at page 18 of the reply, where for the first time she says, I could allege that I want to purchase these products again, but I would emphasize...
She had two opportunities below to amend.
Yes, Your Honor, although these cases
came out later, I understand.
Right. So if
it makes a difference, can we say it would be futile?
Oh, absolutely.
I'll bet you he'll allege that.
Yes, Your Honor. So
if he's told he has to allege it, he'll allege it.
Yes, Your Honor. Two quick responses. First, as to the futility point, you're right. Multiple opportunities to allege it, didn't allege it. And then second, I would emphasize that in Davidson, the court noted that those allegations were present and that there was no reason, nothing in the plaintiff's complaint to suggest otherwise, i.e. to call into question the plaintiff's sincerity in pleading that she intended to purchase the products again.
Didn't she say that it was worthless?
That's precisely right, Your Honor. She says they're worthless. She says that they're snake oil. I think it's reasonably clear from this record before the district court that plaintiff does not intend to purchase
them. She wouldn't purchase them if they said this doesn't help you in any way.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which is basically her allegation. See, that's the problem with the injunctive relief claim in this case. She says they're worthless. If you'd only told me they were worthless, I wouldn't have bought them. But I can't take from that if I knew they were worthless, I'd be happy to buy them in the future.
That's precisely right, Your Honor. With respect to the other colloquy that you developed with plaintiff's counsel during his argument, with respect to whether or not he's adequately pled anecdotal evidence of falsity with respect to these products, you'll recall that the district court discussed this at length and said, look, all we have in the allegations is that plaintiff visually measured the spots and wrinkles on her skin and believed that they didn't change. And the district court properly, in our view, said that that's just not enough, as anecdotal evidence goes, to state a claim for falsity under Rule 9b. I would like to draw your attention to one other thing that is maybe not apparent from the district court's order. The district court complained correctly, in our view, that plaintiff had not pleaded any facts as to the frequency with which she took these products, the duration for which she took these products, the amounts in which she took these products. It's clear from her allegations, both in the body of the complaint and in the exhibits of the complaint, that she actually bought limited quantities of these products. As to the CoQ10 balls, she bought a two-month supply. And as to the C-Balance, it's actually unclear because her allegations are not consistent. She either bought about a two-and-a-half-month supply or a four-month supply. But she says in the complaint that she used the products for about 7 months before stopping, presumably with some left because she felt like they weren't working. As a result, we do know, even from this record on the pleadings, that plaintiff did not use the products consistent with the directions on the products. And we would submit that heavily influences her ability to state a claim based on anecdotal evidence. I also don't want to lose sight of the RICO claim in this case, Your Honors, the only claim that's been pleaded against Mr. Hahn. The RICO claim, as the district court explained, fails because plaintiff doesn't allege any sort of fraud, and of course it's mail and wire fraud that were the alleged predicate acts for the RICO claim. However, there are other independent reasons for the dismissal of the RICO claim. There's insufficient allegations of an enterprise. There's no allegation that Mr. Hahn actually undertook any fraudulent acts or that he directed any fraudulent acts by other people or that he had the requisite fraudulent intent. So the RICO claim is subject to dismissal as well. I see my time is nearly concluded. Unless there are further questions, I'm grateful for your time and attention.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Please allow me 2 minutes.
Yes, you can have 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Watch the clock.
ER 193, 194, 195. This is the WUMECAN website, including testimonial regarding insomnia, mood change, and so on. It doesn't have a disclaimer at the end of the page. So that disclaimer must have been provided in bold case in a box, but it's missing. Therefore, this is a violation of the rule.
Where's the disclaimer on the product?
Disclaimer at the end of this webpage.
I asked you, is the disclaimer on the product?
Oh, disclaimer on the product?
Yes.
Oh, it doesn't matter. This is an advertisement.
Don't tell me what matters and doesn't matter. Just to answer my question. Was the disclaimer on the product?
Oh, I don't think there is a disclaimer on the product.
You think there is?
Label, there small is. Label. I didn't pay attention to that, but I don't think so. No, there is none.
There's no disclaimer on it.
No, no. It has a dietary supplement, but...
Contrary to what your friend said, there's no disclaimer on the product?
No, I don't see. And the other...
Are you just looking now, or you've examined... You looked at this before you got here?
Hmm?
Are you just... answering the question now on the basis of your skimming of the ER, or do you know for a fact based on your looking at the box?
Oh, that is my understanding, but I want to make sure what I'm answering to Your Honor is correct or not. But anywhere labeling or label include anything, it is the rule. Is it 2 minutes is over? Can I have one more minute? Yeah.
Well, you may answer Judge Corman's question, and then your time will be up.
Yeah, there is none. No disclaimer in the bottle. And the other one was, what was that? Worthless. The motion to dismiss. The order was issued in June 2017, and the Davison versus Kimberly-Clark was issued in December 2017, and the amended one was May 2018. The Davison says, even if the...
We know what Davison says.
Yeah, so no intention to buy. But if there is an allegation that which it shows an injury in fact, the dismissal can be prevented. But at that time, in June 2017, we didn't know that kind of modification,
required.
Amendment.
We understand, counsel. Thank you very much. Shin versus Yumikin will be submitted.